Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Who can sleep when there's so much Boston sports to talk about? This is Late Night on Sports Radio WEEI.
I'd actually like to address something, if that's okay.
No.
And oh, by the way, can we address the ground rules there? What is going on?
We're in a different era.
Ken Obrey from Boston, bro.
Didn't shower. Didn't use a towel. I got in the bed, out of the bed.
Stink up the joint.
Chris, I can't make this. You see the text, right?
It's not your money. What do you care?
Because it didn't happen that night.
But that's what happened to me for real in Boston. Like, walk in, the music stopped.
Shut up! John, shut up! This is insane. I think everybody's now dumber for having listened to this.
I got places to go. I got a tee time. Let's go.
All right, well, away we go. Brian Barrett with you. WEI Late Night for the next 2 hours or so. The number is 617-779-7937. If you want to hop on board, join me for the evening. All right, so this Andrew Luck situation has been the national story in the sports world. And it's funny to me that Bill Belichick made some headlines today for his take on the Andrew Luck situation. Or I don't even know if I'd call that a take, what Bill Belichick had to say about Andrew Luck. So he's doing his press conference today, and he says, he's a good player. I didn't see that, but I really didn't follow them. We all have to make our decisions. He made his. I respect that. So at the time, he said, he's a good player. I didn't see that. So basically, everybody around the sports world's like, hold on. Hold on a second here. Does Bill Belichick not know that Andrew Luck retired? And obviously he did, but it came across as Bill Belichick didn't know that Andrew Luck retired.
Well, I mean, we're not playing the Colts today, so.
That's a good point, Joe. That's a good point. we're focused on the Giants for our last preseason game. But nonetheless, the Patriots have to then basically clarify the statement. In the transcript, they write, I didn't see that coming. Just to clarify, to make sure everybody knew that Bill Belichick did actually, in fact, know that Andrew Luck retired. But then later on today, he was on with the guys with OMF. Wiggy was in today for Lou, and they asked him about the Andrew Luck situation, and he had a very similar comment, very short. I guess a little bit, but you never know. I don't know what was going on with him. I haven't followed it. Obviously, he's dealt with some stuff the last couple of years. He can certainly make his own decisions. And we can tell you this, as it pertains to the Patriots, there is no love loss. There is no love loss when it comes to the Indianapolis Colts. Remember, this was the team that ratted on the Patriots for Deflategate. This is the team that called up the NFL, called up Roger Goodell, and you had this whole thing transpire because essentially the Colts decided that, oh yeah, we lost 45-7 in an AFC championship game. It must have been the football. So Bill Belichick, when it's something that is having to do with the Colts, he's not going to go out of his way to praise the player, right? He's not going to go out of his way to praise Andrew Luck. Yeah, he's been a tremendous player. It was really tough competing against him. He was unbelievable, this, that, and the other thing. He's not going to do that. He's not going to praise him. Now, if it was Ed Reed and Ed Reed was retiring, Bill Belichick would go out of his way to praise Ed Reed because he respects Ed Reed, and Ed Reed is somebody that Bill Belichick has labeled as the best safety of all time. But now, maybe now he has ill will towards the Ravens because apparently they put the Colts on to everything. But you get the point. At the time that Ed Reed decided to move on, the Patriots did not have these issues with Ed Reed in particular. So he would praise other players across the league if they decided ultimately that they wanted to retire, but he's not going to do it for a member of the Indianapolis Colts, considering what the Colts did to this Patriots team a couple of years ago. Now, another thing that I want to mention with this whole Andrew Luck situation is it seems like to me that most of the blame has been put on the organization, and I understand why. Look, when you have an owner in Jim Irsay, and he has Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck. So you had Peyton Manning, who is the slam dunk number one pick in the draft. And then you follow that up. You stumble into Andrew Luck because the one season that Peyton Manning ends up getting injured, has the neck surgery, you go 2-14, and you have, who was it, Curtis Painter, I believe the guy filling in, and he was running out of the end zone. Remember that? He's running all the way like out of bounds for like 5 yards. I don't know what the hell he was doing. He got a safety. But you get so lucky to get another generational talent, right? So you essentially go from Peyton Manning, not essentially, you go from Peyton Manning to 1 year of crap to Andrew Luck. So Andrew Luck, the best prospect since John Elway. And that team, you know how many Super Bowls they have in that run, which is basically 20 years, one damn Super Bowl. That's all the Indianapolis Colts have to show for it, because Jim Irsay wanted this team to be about him, right? Jim Irsay wanted to get the attention, just like Jerry Jones gets it in Dallas. So he said, yeah, Hall of Famer Bill Polian, yeah, we don't want you anymore. We're going to move on from you. And look, I understand that the last couple of drafts for Polian were not great. But again, if you're going to replace a guy like Bill Polian, you better make sure you have the right guy to fill in. And you went with Ryan Grigson, and he was just awful. But the reason he went with Ryan Grigson is because when Peyton Manning was playing for the Colts, and when Bill Polian was there, and was Tony Dungy was there, we didn't make a lot about it. Jim Irsay. We didn't talk about Jim Irsay much. And then Jim Irsay, once they decide to move on from Peyton Manning, to move on from Bill Polian, it became about Jim Irsay. Jim Irsay wanted to be front and center with this organization. He wanted to take all the credit for everything that was going on there. So clearly Jim Irsay, he's the number one figure to blame in all this, because he hired a guy that wasn't equipped to be an NFL general manager, and Ryan Grigson just decided not to get any offensive linemen for like years on end. He drafted Philip Dorsett, who we're all, of course, familiar with here. But Philip Dorsett is somebody that they already had T.Y. Hilton. There was no reason to get another speedster at wide receiver when you had a gaping hole in the offensive line, right? So you drafted Philip Dorsett in the first round. It just made no sense whatsoever from what the Colts needed from an on-the-field standpoint. They needed offensive linemen or players on the defensive side of the ball, because that side of the ball sucked when Ryan Grigson took over as well. And let's not forget, this idiot traded for Trent Richardson. He gave up a first-round pick for Trent Richardson. So clearly Jim Irsay has handled this organization so poorly. Like, you have to try to not win more than one Super Bowl with Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck. I mean, that is pretty damn difficult to do. That is pretty pathetic that they have one Super Bowl to account for. But the other thing I think we have to look to as well is with Andrew Luck in particular, right? So as I mentioned, we've said that he's the best prospect since essentially John Elway. That's how he was labeled. And you're looking at a 4-4 postseason performance. You're looking at the fact that you got crushed by the Colts last year, or rather got crushed by the Chiefs last year, 31-13. Your one AFC championship game, you got blown out 45-7. This was supposed to be an all-time great. This was supposed to be a generational quarterback. And quite frankly, when we look at Andrew Luck's career, did he live up to the hype? Well, I don't think so. Did he really live up to the hype? Is that what you were supposed to get out of Andrew Luck? Four wins in the postseason, that's it? That's all you get from Luck? Like, from my perspective, that is an underwhelming career. And I think part of the blame does go on the player as well, in terms of the reason he's retiring is because he suffered and sustained too many injuries throughout his career. And if you look at Andrew Luck, he put his body in harm's way way too many times, took way too many hits. You look at Russell Wilson, how often does he get hit? Never. Never gets hit. And he's somebody that is more similar to Andrew Luck in the way he plays, because Russell Wilson, of course, will get outside the pocket and throw the football down the field, right? Luck plays more like Wilson than he does Brady and Breeze, where they're in the pocket all the time. But Wilson's the one guy that's that mobile-type quarterback that can actually protect himself. Carson Wentz continues to take hits. Cam Newton continues to take hits. And you look at Russell Wilson, he's the only guy in that mold that doesn't sustain injuries. Even Ben Roethlisberger, he's always dealing with something. And that's where you give Tom Brady the credit, because Brady and Breeze, these guys never get hurt because they're not going to take unnecessary hits like Andrew Luck did. So that's part of the reason that this guy's career has ended so abruptly, is because he took too much punishment and he put his body in harm's way on way too many occasions. Not to mention the fact, and I alluded to this a little bit earlier, remember Andrew Luck's second shoulder injury. The first one we all know was because he tore his labrum, and that's from playing on the field. But remember the second time he injured his shoulder? Yes, snowboard issue. After he had shoulder surgery to repair a torn labrum, this dude's out on a snowboard and he sprains his AC joint, and that's part of the reason he can't get back on the football field. So it's almost like I felt like there was this huge defense of Andrew Luck over the past 48 hours or so, where everybody was defending Andrew Luck. Oh, the organization didn't treat him well. And I'm sympathetic to that. I understand. I can point out that Jim Irsay is an idiot, that Ryan Grigson was an idiot, that Chuck Pagano was not a good football coach. I can point all those things out, but I can also look at the fact and say, listen, the player did a really poor job protecting himself on the football field. So Andrew Luck has to shoulder some of the blame no pun intended, shoulders some of the blame for why his career didn't live up to what everybody thought Andrew Luck was going to be. Like, now it's not even a question between him and Russell Wilson. Remember that that was a debate a couple of years ago? Clearly, Russell Wilson's had the better career. Russell Wilson's the one with the hardware. He's got the Super Bowl. He's been to another one. And his career is going to continue to go on. Russell Wilson's probably going to play another 10 years in the league. That guy never gets hurt. He never takes hits. So that debate is over. Russell Wilson gets the bump in that particular conversation, which used to be a legitimate debate. Who is better, Luck or Wilson? And most people sided with Luck, but clearly now it's Russell Wilson. He's the one carrying that franchise into the postseason now after the Legion of Boom era has basically gone away and Richard Sherman's in San Francisco. Cam Chancellor is retired. The only one really left from that group is Bobby Wagner. So Russell Wilson is the engine that still makes that organization go. So that debate is over. So I just feel like from Andrew Luck's perspective, I understand that a lot of people want to praise Andrew Luck for his career and whatnot, but when I look at Andrew Luck's career, it's underwhelming to me. Like, who's had a better career, Matt Ryan or Andrew Luck? Matt Ryan's been around longer. He won an MVP and he made it to a Super Bowl. Matt Ryan is a better NFL quarterback than Andrew Luck. Now, Andrew Luck at his peak, at his highest, he's a better player. He's a more talented player than Matt Ryan. But in terms of the career, that's what I'm comparing here. The totality of the career, you can't argue that Andrew Luck had a better career than Matt Ryan. He just didn't. And this is an underwhelming situation for a guy that we praise to be like the next all-time great prospect. Like, this was supposed to be like LeBron James in the NBA. That's what we were supposed to get, this generational talent. That's how he was labeled. Did he really live up to the generational talent perspective? No, he was not. He's a generational talent, but he didn't perform like a generational talent actually on the football field. 617-779-7937 is the number. Brian Barrett with you, WEI Late Night. Got you for about the next 2 hours or so. Let's get to Kenny's in California tonight. Ken, what's going on?
Hey, Brian, how are you?
Good.
You know, I was taking out the trash yesterday, and I lifted up the lid, and I didn't see Brian Johnson or Chris Owings in there.
Oh, and Ken, wow.
Hell not. Come right, on.
So, well, Ken, to the Brian Johnson thing, I mean, come on. Like, what did you expect? I mean, he shouldn't be in the rotation. He's in there because you've had all these injuries. So I can't really hold him accountable, really. I mean, he's just not that good of a pitcher. But the Owings thing, Ken, I don't understand that from the Red Sox perspective. What is their fixation with this guy? You have a guy in Hernandez that you should be just making your everyday second baseman. See if he can play long term. Owings is a guy that got DFA'd by the Kansas City Royals. Yes, he couldn't play for Kansas City, Ken, and yet the Red Sox are trotting him out. Remember that game a couple of weeks ago? In a game that you needed to win, they had him batting leadoff. I don't understand it.
Oh, you know, and here's the other thing. Does Cora not have a computer? This guy was 6-for-52 against left-handed pitchers in his career. He went 0-for-2. He's 6-for-54. That is 1/9. That is a 1.11 batting average against left-handers. And you had 200-300 hitters, maybe not against left-handers, but a hell of a lot better than 1.11 hitters, okay, on the bench in Hernandez and Brock Holt.
Yeah.
What, Brock Holt needed the day off? What, a utility player needed the day off?
Yeah, it makes no sense to me. Ken, I don't understand it. Ken, and here's the other thing that I would say is, like, it would be one thing if, say, like, you look at the Red Sox right now, they're six games back entering the night of that second wild card spot, right? So it would be one thing if you're back in the division and you say to yourself, all right, we got this young second baseman that's 21, 22 years old. We want to play him more, and maybe his numbers aren't great. Okay, I would understand it if you're trying to develop a player, but when you look at Owings, the guy's 28 years old, and he's already been DFA'd by the Royals. I just don't understand, like, what the upside is for having Owings in the lineup. I don't understand it from any capacity.
And here's the thing. They're not six games ahead. They're six games behind.
Fair.
Six.
Yeah.
Six. And there are at least two games that guy has been a dud in that they could have won. And I don't know how many games you can go back and count that Cora's just not thinking in the dugout. He must have a tea time in Puerto Rico at the end of September.
Yeah, well, remember, Ken, and I appreciate the phone call. You can grab his line if you'd like. It's 617-779-7937. If you remember before the season what Alex Cora said at the writers' meeting there, or the writers' dinner, I should say, in Boston, he said, hey, if you thought we were good last year, wait until this year and print that. Remember that? He said print that. Yeah. Looks exactly like last year to me. I mean, and you know, the whole thing about the pitching staff, what's alarming to me, and Chris Sale, of course, done for the season, David Price making his way back, Nathan Eovaldi's just been absolutely horrible when he's actually been on the mound, and most of the time he's not available. But the thing that sticks out to me is they had this whole idea, right, for basically, they wanted to use the first couple of weeks of the season as like spring training for the pitchers, right? So they were so arrogant that they thought they could just roll their way through their opening start of the season on the West Coast. They ended up 2-8, okay, or 2-8. So they sucked to begin the season. They were atrocious. They were bad. And then you thought, okay, the reason they did that, Alex Cora pointed out, is so guys were fresher in the second half of the season, right? How's that working out? Chris Sale is injured and David Price is injured. Okay, I get Price is making his way back. But the point of all this, right? The rationale behind it was so these guys would be fresh in the second half of the season. And guess what? They're all hurt. So it backfired at the beginning of the year where you started the season 2-8 and then what? 6-13. And now these guys are nowhere to be found because they're injured. So it didn't work in any way. It's unbelievable. 617-779-7937 is the number. Let's get to Cameron. He is in New Hampshire tonight. What's up, Cameron?
Hey, guys. So I was just getting back on the Andrew Luck topic. Sure. I wanted to compare him to RG3.
Okay.
And I hadn't heard anyone do the comparison. And the reason I'm interested in comparing the two is RG3 is kind of an example of someone who has success early on and then gets injury prone because he gets hits, kind of what y'all were talking about earlier. And he hasn't thrown a touchdown in since 2016. You know what I mean? So what is, do you think that RG3 is still a valuable asset? Maybe he should have retired. You know what I mean? Andrew Luck, you know, maybe starting a family. It could be easy that the writing's on the wall. Maybe it's time to take an exit. You know what I mean?
No, actually, I don't know what you mean. Uh-oh. I don't get the connection between Luck and RG3.
All right. So Luck is leaving the league because he's
right.
saying that he's injury prone.
Yeah.
Where RG3 has, in my opinion, injuries has kind of stunted him as a quarterback moving forward.
Oh, okay. So you're saying
ACL.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Like, if you blame the injuries for RG3's lack of success, I appreciate the phone call, Cameron. You can grab his line if you'd like. It's 617-779-7937. All right, with RG3, it's a combination. So first of all, they put him in a bad position to begin his career. If you remember, he had the rookie of the year season, and then he was out there on a knee that was sprained. I remember I was in Virginia at the time. He had a knee sprain. He hit it off Haloti Ngata's helmet. It was never the same, and they put him out there on that awful field in the postseason. He tore his ACL. So, yeah, part of it is the injuries. And, by the way, FedEx Field in Landover, Maryland, it's the worst field in the NFL. I mean, maybe besides the one in Oakland. But nonetheless, it's horrible. Everybody slips all over the place. But after that, RG3 the following season, and this is partly a poorly run organization, kind of like the Colts, RG3 went to Daniel Snyder's offense. This is This is reported all over the place. He went into the office and he told me he didn't want to run any of the read option stuffs, right? And that's what made RG3 a successful quarterback, was like running the ball. So he went into a meeting with Mike Shanahan and Kyle Shanahan and went to a whiteboard and said, hey, all this stuff is off the table. I'm not running any of this crap anymore. So then RG3 was never the same player once again. RG3 was a very arrogant guy. He still is a very arrogant guy. But remember he was basically trademarking all his phrases, like unbelievably believable and all that different type of stuff. I think RG3 just got a little bit too much in his own head. He got a little bit too arrogant, not to mention the fact that he was diminutive in stature. A great athlete, but very diminutive in stature. And he took way too many damn hits, similar to Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck's thing, he pointed out it's the injuries. I don't think it's about his family. I think he just doesn't want to keep doing this rehab thing and getting injured, rehabbing, getting injured, rehabbing. And quite frankly, and we were talking when Courtney Fallon was in here, we were talking to Mike Wells earlier today. Do we really even know what's going on with that ankle injury? We just know that he couldn't come back, and they were referencing, like, he was referencing Andrew Luck, like, something to do with nerves or something. Like, we still don't even know if he could have played this year, right? Because they had Jacoby Brissett sitting out the third preseason game, so just in case he had to start the opening game of the season, he wouldn't take an injury in the third preseason game. They couldn't risk it because Luck's already dealing with an injury. So I'm not quite sure that Luck's even healthy to come back from this. And do we know at what point Andrew Luck would have actually been healthy to get back on the field in the 2019 season? Like, we have no idea. He could have started the season on the PUP list and maybe he tried to make his way back. But at this particular point in time, nobody really knows what was going on with this ankle calf issue. I mean, that's just a weird situation with the Colts. But I guess from a Patriots perspective, this is what you do.
Duck boats.
Yeah, you take one team off the list, right? I mean, the Colts, I was looking at it a couple of weeks ago. The Colts were one of the only other teams I was worried about besides the Chiefs. I mean, Gus Bradley, I don't worry about the Chargers because that guy's an idiot. Don't show Tom Brady the same look the entire game. I'm sorry, I'm not buying into the hype with the Cleveland Browns. There's not a lot of competitors for the Patriots in the AFC. They're going to be in the AFC title game. If it's in Foxborough, they're not losing to the Chiefs at home. That's just the reality of the situation. They're not going to lose to the Chiefs at home. All right, if you want to hop on board, the number is 617-779-7937. I do want to get to one Celtics-related note. I got some Red Sox thoughts as well. If you want to hop on board, the number is 617-779-7937. We'll get you trending in just a second here.
This is Boston Sports Station. Now here's what's trending on WEEI.
Here's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com. Some rough news for the Pats. The Athletic's Jeff Howe is reporting that center David Andrews has been hospitalized with blood clots and his season is in jeopardy. Meanwhile, safety Patrick Chung has waived a court appearance in New Hampshire on a cocaine possession charge and has entered a not guilty plea. Chung is now scheduled for a November 8th court appearance. Chung declined to comment about the case today when he met with the media. David Ortiz has hired former Boston Police Commissioner Ed Davis to look into the events surrounding his shooting in June. Davis will work with a group of private investigators. The Sox off tonight. They open up a two-game set with the Rockies in Colorado tomorrow. The Sox just took 2 of 3 from the Padres over the weekend. They couldn't finish the job, though. Of course, they couldn't sweep it. They enter tonight 6 games back of the Rays for that second wild card spot in the American League. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com.
You know, pays off. I read his body language. You know, I think the great thing about Phil, he takes advantage of his opportunities. And, you know, a lot of guys have been injured this preseason. Phil plays all three wide receiver positions, remembers all the coaching points from all the times we've talked about certain things, even though he may not have done it. He goes in there and does it the way that, you know, coach wants it done. So I love playing with Phil. He's been a great contributor to our team, and he had a great night.
All right, so that's the sign I was alluding to earlier. Tom Brady, after the game the other night, basically saying Philip Dorsett can play all three receiver positions. He's versatile. That was Tom Brady sending the message to Bill Belichick. He needs to be on the team. The number is 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett with you for the next 90 minutes or so. That was Brady saying, look, I've worked with this guy for 2 years. I want him on the damn roster. That was the message that Brady was sending to Bill Belichick, because remember, what Brady wants is Brady wants to have a great season so he can go to the negotiating table with Bill Belichick and say, hey, this is what I want. Remember, because Bill Belichick didn't give him that security, right, that Brady ultimately wanted. So he wants to make sure this year that his numbers look really good at the end of the season, and one of the guys that he thinks can help him is Philip Dorsett, because he already has a chemistry. They already have a cohesion together on the football field. Now, another interesting development that has happened over the past couple of days is what Mark Daniels from the Providence Journal wrote today. Quote, this offseason, referring to this is Demaryius Thomas, the veteran receiver has latched on to Tom Brady and Julian Edelman. His locker is directly next to Brady's in the Patriots locker room. This offseason, when he's been seen at practice, Thomas was with Edelman. That's not all. The Providence Journal learned that Thomas has also been getting help at the TB12 Sports Therapy Center in Patriot Place this offseason. Brady has often credited his longtime body coach, Alex Guerrero, who runs the TB12 Center, for helping him last this long in the NFL. Guerrero has also had Edelman as a client as well, so it makes sense that Thomas would elicit similar services as he attempts to come back from an Achilles injury.
He wants a little bit of that blue Kool-Aid.
Interesting, isn't it? It's interesting. So think about this. The other night, I didn't think anything of it at the time, but now that I think back, when Tom Brady was on the sideline the other night, he's all buddy-buddy with Demaryius Thomas, joking around, and I was thinking, well, he's one of the closer guys to Brady in age, right? Demaryius Thomas is 31, Brady's 42, but most of these guys, they're in their mid-20s, right? So he's one of the guys closer to Brady in age, but now that I think about it, this would be really good for the Tom Brady brand, wouldn't it? TB12 fixing up Demaryius Thomas, and then Demaryius Thomas, who, remember, he sustained that Achilles injury in December. He did it in week 16 of the season. So if he gets back on the field quicker than most people think he could, right? I mean, you're talking about an Achilles injury. That's a really significant injury, to the point where you talk about with Kevin Durant, he may not play at all this upcoming season in the NBA. We all remember how bad that injury was for Durant. So Demaryius Thomas, we're talking about, is he actually going to be ready for the season? And if he is, think about who that helps. It certainly helps Tom Brady, because the TB12 brand will benefit from having another guy work out at the TB12 Center, rather. And if he performs at a high level this year, oh, man, That is a victory lap for Brady and Alex Guerrero and the TB12 brand that they're trying to grow for Brady post-career, right? This is just another thing they can use in terms of when they're advertising or when they're promoting their brand, so to speak. This is another thing that they can look at and say, hey, look, Demaryius Thomas, other side of 30, coming back from an Achilles tear, and look at him now, he's performing at a high level. And I also imagine this with Brady. And as I said, part of the thing that Brady wants, in my mind, is he wants to be able to have really good numbers. And I'm not saying selfishly have bad numbers. He wants to win every game, and he'll do whatever it takes. But he doesn't want to have the numbers he had a season ago, remember, because Belichick essentially gave him that, like, fake contract bump or salary bump, if you will, and it was all these incentives that Bill knew that Brady was never going to reach because the receiving core was not great. So I have to imagine that Brady wants to make sure that he's in the power position when they negotiate again, and he got ultimately what he wanted in a little bit of a sense, where he got a little bit of freedom in terms of he could technically leave if he wanted to, so maybe he could have some leverage, although I don't think Bill Belichick really cares about that. He doesn't use the franchise tag, so he's like, oh, okay, yeah, Tom, you don't want the franchise, okay. If that's what we're going to do, I mean, this is the number I've agreed to. It's going to be a one-year deal, not the 2 to 3 year deal that we all believe Brady wanted. Yeah, okay, Tom, you can take your non-franchise thing. We won't franchise you. So I don't think that was a big concession for Bill Belichick, but what Brady wants is he wants to have that phenomenal season where he can go to the negotiating table and try to be in a power position, if you will. And if Demaryius Thomas is somebody that can perform at a high level for him, well, then that's going to help him because the other options he has, if you think about it, so you know what you have with Edelman, right? In terms of Brady's weaponry, Edelman's the one guy that you can say coming into the season, 100% you can depend on. Julian Edelman, he's the only guy. Now, I get James White out of the backfield, but Edelman's the one guy you look at and you say, okay, I know what I have with Julian Edelman. I know where he's going to be. We all know the chemistry between Brady and Edelman is phenomenal. We can go back through the years, all the clutch catches Edelman has made, but that's secure. You think after that, who's the second most dependable pass catcher for this team? And I'm not talking about James White out of the backfield. Really, who's the second most dependable pass catcher for the Patriots entering the season? I would have to say Josh Gordon. And that, of course, we all know is always going to be a question mark because Josh Gordon, of course, we all can acknowledge that he's had his issues off the field. So that's always going to be a question mark. But that's number two, right? That's his second most dependable receiver entering the season because of what he's been able to do when he's actually on the field with Brady. Remember, when Josh Gordon had to leave the team last year, he was leading the team in receiving. So I would put him number two on the list. And then you have an argument for who's number three. Clearly, as we saw the other night, Brady has developed a nice little chemistry with Philip Dorsett. But I don't want to go all in on Philip Dorsett at this point because Philip Dorsett is somebody that's been with this team for two seasons, and he came over in that trade for Jacoby Brissett. And ever since Philip Dorsett came here, he hasn't really been a big key contributor, rather. Now, you can say, all right, well, some of the times he's behind on the depth chart because, remember, the first year, the Patriots were loaded when he got here. You still had Amendola at that particular point in time. You had Edelman. You had Brandon Cooks. You had all these guys, right? So he was kind of buried on the depth chart. But last year, when you were expecting more from Philip Dorsett, especially at the beginning of the season when Edelman was out with that injury, you wanted more from Dorsett, and quite frankly, he just did not perform. Now, you can reference what he did against the Chiefs in the AFC title game where he had that touchdown grab, but for the season in totality, he averaged 18 yards per game. So it's great that Tom Brady's talking him up after the game the other night, and it's great that he looks like he's got this chemistry on the field with Tom Brady, but that coming into the season is like your third most dependable weapon in terms of the receivers, because don't give me any of the tight ends. You can't give me any of the tight ends at this particular point in time. There's nobody you can depend on, and even if you want to say Ben Watson, well, you can't say that at the beginning of the season because he's suspended for four games. So he's not going to be out there until at least week five, so we're not going to see him for a while anyway, so you can't throw that name out at me. And by the way, it wasn't like he had a good season last year in New Orleans. And the guy's 38 years old. You're really depending on that guy to be a key contributor to the team this season. So then I would look at after that. That's why Brady looks at a guy like Demaryius Thomas and he says, well, think about it. Demaryius Thomas played with another all-time great quarterback in Peyton Manning and went to the school of Peyton Manning in terms of football, right? Demaryius Thomas has referenced how much he's learned from Peyton Manning. And Brady probably looks at it like, all right, if this dude can pick up Peyton Manning stuff, if he can pick up the offense that Peyton Manning wants to run and has had a lot of success in his NFL career, and he's somebody that is a former first round pick, he's somebody that little bit underwhelming in terms of what you thought his career was going to be. Like, you thought he was going to be in the Julio Jones type mode. Like, that was the hype around Demaryius Thomas coming out of Georgia Tech. Remember, he ran a 4.38 40. He's had a really good career, but he hasn't had the career that ultimately everybody thought he could with the skill set that he basically has at his disposal. But nonetheless, he's a guy that's played at a really high level, made a bunch of Pro Bowls, and has been somebody that's been over 1,000 yards in multiple seasons. So Brady probably looks at that as like, okay, this is like a legitimate NFL talent. I'm looking around at these other guys, and I see Jacoby Myers, who is an undrafted kid out of NC State. I'm not sure what we're going to get from him this year. I can't guarantee I'm going to do anything with Jacoby Myers on the football field. Remember, this is a guy that left NC State early and didn't get drafted, right? Because he, in terms of what he did at the combine, he was so slow. He ran, I believe, the second slowest 40 time out of all the wide receivers. So in terms of just a skill set, in terms of being toolsy, Demaryius Thomas has a lot more at his disposal than does Jacoby Myers. And then the other guy that you would look at is N'Keal Harry, who, again, is a rookie. He's a rookie who I get Brady reached out to this offseason, and they worked out and all that different type of stuff. But the problem with N'Keal Harry right now, and the reports from Patriots training camp today, is N'Keal Harry was walking around gingerly after practice, or during practice, I should say. So N'Keal Harry, this whole preseason, has essentially been banged up, going back to the Detroit game when he had to leave early after making that nice catch. So you like what you see from N'Keal Harry on the football field, but there's no way Brady can go into the season and depend on this guy. He has no relationship with him on the field, so to speak, and at least he knows with a guy like Demaryius Thomas, well, he's somebody that has actually done it at a high level in the NFL. So I would imagine this is a big-time thing for Brady now, that Demaryius Thomas is getting healthier. He was taken off the physically unable to perform list, and Brady probably looks at him like, yeah, I want to see that guy on the football field. Now, Bill Belichick mentioned some stuff about Demaryius Thomas earlier today, and he said, quote, certainly he's done some impressive things, but it's stringing them together. It's being able to do it on a consistent basis and come back and doing it again. Now, this is what Demaryius Thomas had to say when he was asked about the situation in terms of him getting back on the football field. He said, me, I can still go. Like I said, knock a little rust off and keep building on the days. So Demaryius Thomas saying, yeah, I'm ready to go. You're asking me if I'm ready to go? I'm ready to go. See, I like that attitude from a receiver. Not to say that he's a diva, but, you know, you gotta be a little brash if you're a receiver. Now, Ryan Hannibal had this note on WEI.com where Demaryius Thomas admitted that no other teams showed interest in him this offseason, but he's apparently okay with this. He said, I've got a chance to play with arguably, from the last 7 years on, the best team in football, and to play with another future Hall of Famer, so I'm blessed, and I'm excited about that. The one thing I will say is this. A little bit concerning that nobody else was interested in Demaryius Thomas. Isn't that a little bit concerning to you? And I understand the Patriots have done it before, but it's usually like with no-name guys who we had never heard of. Remember, like, Wes Welker, he had played well against the Patriots in a couple of games coming from Miami, and he comes over to the Patriots. But nobody really knew about Wes Welker until he came here, right? We've seen it with those type of guys before. Like, Brandon LaFell actually had, like, a pretty nice run with the Patriots when he came over, and nobody had really heard of Brandon LaFell before he came over to the Patriots. He was with the Carolina Panthers before, and Brady made it work. But this is a different situation. This is a high-level, high-profile player that didn't have other teams interested in him because they're worried about the injury concern. They're worried about Demaryius Thomas. Will he actually be able to remain on the football field because he's dealing with the second Achilles injury of his career? And I get it's on a different leg, but nonetheless, that was why Demaryius Thomas didn't have other opportunities around the NFL, is because everybody else around the league was worried about his injury history. So I'm wondering if Demaryius Thomas can get back to at least 80 to 85% of the athlete he was last year before the injury. That would be the concern. And the other concern I would have is that we've seen it throughout history with this Patriots team. A lot of times they'll bring in these veteran receivers at the end of their NFL careers, the Reggie Waynes who left in training camp. Chad Ochocinco does not perform at a high level. The Joey Galloways of the world, right? We've seen this type of player come to the Patriots before and not be able to perform at a high level. The one difference with this one compared to the other ones is it seems like, based on the fact that he was working out at the TB12 Center, it seems like this one in particular, Brady is invested in the fact that he wants to make sure Demaryius Thomas works out for this football team. It seems like Brady has basically an investment, so to speak, for lack of a better term, in Demaryius Thomas because of his connection to the TB12 Center. Demaryius Thomas, I'm telling you, if he has a big season for the Patriots, you're going to see Demaryius Thomas bragging all over the place about the TB12 Center. So Tom Brady, brand recognition, baby. This is what he's going for here. He's got Demaryius Thomas, who's going to promote the TB12 brand. I wonder if he's getting into some of the smoothies and that type of stuff as well. All right, a lot more to get into. If you want to hop on board, the number is 617-779-7937. Brian Barrett with you for the next hour and a half or so right here on WEI Late Night. All right, so Josh McDaniels today was asked about the Andrew Luck situation. He said, quote, "I think the league will miss him. He's a really talented player. He's one of the toughest guys at that position in the league." Josh McDaniels kind of dodged a bullet here, didn't he? Because remember, he was going to take that job, and the last minute he was criticized royally across the country for basically backing out. But man, he dodged a bullet at this particular point in time where now you're moving on from Andrew Luck. You got Jacoby Brissett. No disrespect to Jacoby Brissett. I guess it is disrespect to Jacoby Brissett. Whenever anybody says that, no disrespect, it is kind of disrespectful.
Like that scene in Talladega Nights where he's like, well, with all due respect, yeah. He can say whatever he wants to say to me.
Yeah, once you say with all due respect. Now, I can't say that, but nonetheless, you get the point. You're not a Super Bowl contender anymore, and it looks like the Colts in the future are going to be looking for another franchise-caliber quarterback, so Josh McDaniels would have been screwed. The number is 617-779-7937 if you want to hop on board here. All right, so I want to pivot to a Celtics thing for a second here. So Pro Basketball Talk, which is like the equivalent of Pro Football Talk run by NBC Sports, they're ranking the 50 best players in the NBA in 5 years. So 5 years from now, who's going to be the 50 best players in the NBA? And I bring this up, Kurt Heelan's the guy that's doing this. And Jaylen Brown came in at 27. Here's what Heelan had to say. Quote, "What stood out watching Jaylen Brown when USA Basketball training camp came to Los Angeles last week was that he was playing freely and aggressively. Like the Jaylen Brown of a couple of seasons ago, the one from the conference finals playoff run, not the cautious guy hesitating and looking to find his space at the start of the season." That's interesting to me. So Jaylen Brown's playing for Team USA right now, getting coached by Greg Popovich, and it looks like he's comfortable in the system when he wasn't comfortable with the Celtics this year. Okay. But anyway, he goes on to say he was talking about the second half of last season. Quote, "Brown adjusted to that role by the end of the season in terms of coming off the bench and was one of Boston's few bright spots. After the All-Star break, he averaged 13.8 points per game. Brown may have found his groove again, but this is still a team with Marcus Smart starting at the two and Jason Tatum and Gordon Hayward on the wing, all ahead of Brown on the depth chart. Brown is going to have to earn his run on this roster," which this is a little concerning to me, what Kurt Heelan is pointing out, because from my perspective, in no world should Marcus Smart, and I get everybody in this town loves him, should Marcus Smart be starting over Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown, like, you have to figure out what you have with that player. You know what you have with Marcus Smart. Marcus Smart is a defensive player, and he's going to take some bad shots, but for the most part, he can be like a backup point guard when you need him on the court. He's going to defend at a high level. He's gritty. We all know what he does. He hustles. He's been in the league for a long time, since 2014. We know what Marcus Smart is as a player. He's a glue guy, one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA, but he's never going to be a big-time offensive player. With Jaylen Brown, I feel like because of what happened last year with his team, his development was halted. Jaylen Brown's development was halted within the Celtics framework, if you will, by the way that they were running things offensively. Jaylen Brown, at the beginning of the season, they weren't taking advantage of his skill sets, where he's basically just hanging out in the corner. Then he's on the bench. He finally figures it out. But here's the thing. Jaylen Brown, when we look at this, he was the third overall pick in the draft a couple of years ago. And Jaylen Brown enters restricted free agency next summer, which means he could sign with another team. And if the Celtics don't match the offer, he could go elsewhere. So for the sake of just the asset, I'm not talking about just the player in particular, but you need to find out what you have in Jaylen Brown. You have to give him the opportunity to showcase his skill set to see if he actually is one of the franchise cornerstones going forward. Because if not, the Celtics have to figure out what they're going to do with this guy long term. You can't just let Jaylen Brown walk into restricted free agency without a plan if you're Danny Ainge. You need to have some sort of plan with this guy. So either he's going to be a pillar, he's going to be a future star of this organization, or you have to get rid of the asset. It's one of two things with Jaylen Brown. You can't be in the middle with this situation. You got to figure this thing out sooner rather than later. So if you're starting the season with Marcus Smart in the starting rotation and Jaylen Brown coming off the bench, that's a joke. Jaylen Brown should be the one starting for the Celtics. No doubt about that. He has the higher upside. He's the player you need to find out more about. So even if you are essentially going to move on from him eventually, well, then you find a way to trade him, right? So at least showcase his skill set, rather. And when I look at it, I really start to question how this Celtics team is built right now. I'm really wondering how this Celtics team is built, because you think about it, you don't have like definitive roles with this team. You have a bunch of guys that want to do similar things, right? Kemba Walker's a scorer. Jason Tatum's a scorer. Jaylen Brown is a scorer, right? All these guys. Gordon Hayward's a facilitator and scorer. This team is lacking, like, these role players that are like shooters, so to speak. Like the shooter-defender type, like the P.J. Tuckers, the Josh Richardsons. The guys that are cool with their role that is, hey, I'm going to stay in the corner and I'm going to shoot threes. The Celtics don't have guys like that. They don't have those type of players. So here's the thing that I look at from the Celtics' perspective. With Jaylen Brown, if you spend a third overall pick on a guy, you have to give him the opportunity to showcase his skill set, or else he's going to get sick and tired, and this is going to be a problem, right? Because Jaylen Brown, if you think about it from his perspective, he's probably already fed up with what he had to deal with last year. Not only was he the only guy to call out Kyrie Irving and nobody defended him publicly, but he also is the guy that suffered the most in terms of his role. Jason Tatum didn't suffer in terms of his role. He got as many shots as he wanted, right? Marcus Morris took shots left and right. So Jaylen Brown was the guy that sacrificed the most for this Celtics team. And if you take a guy this highly in the draft, obviously Danny Ainge thinks highly of the player. So Danny Ainge, he has to play a role in telling Brad Stevens, listen, Brad, you have to give this guy an opportunity to shine. So you have to put him in advantageous situations. So Jaylen Brown coming off screens, right? When he does that, he's flying around, coming down, downhill, going towards the basket. That's where he's effective. You can't start this season and have a similar offense to what you had a year ago, where Brad Stevens just thought everything was going to organically basically come together. And because this team had so much talent that everything was going to work out, you have to put Jaylen Brown in situations that feature his skills, right? Where he's coming down, downhill, he's coming off a screen, he's getting to the basket. That's where Jaylen Brown is at his best. You can't have Jaylen Brown like he was a season ago, camping out at the three-point line. And if you don't take advantage of Jaylen Brown, and if you don't give him that opportunity to start and prove to you whether or not he was worthy of the third overall pick, well, then you just completely mismanaged the asset. That's what you would have done if you were Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens and the Celtics from an organizational perspective. The number is 617-779-7937. Let's get to Mike. He's in North Providence. What's up, Mike?
Hi, Brian. Yeah, interesting note on Jaylen Brown. From December 1st on to the end of the season, and it just carried right on through to the playoffs. If you actually looked at the points per touch that players have in the league, he was in the top 10. He was actually right in between James Harden and his teammate, Eric Gordon.
That's a good number.
Points per touch. Yeah. If you ever watch Houston, those two guys are just constantly shooting. So, I mean, but the main point here is, it's points per touch. So he was scoring about as many points as he could with the accesses he had to the ball. And the only way that he could score more is simply be given the ball more. Mm-hmm. And that was the big difference from the previous season. He actually had about 10 fewer touches per game, last year than he did the season before. So in fact, he was actually better than he was the year before. The problem is you're limiting his opportunities, and this is most people, unfortunately, they can't rationalize this in their head. They think that what happens on the floor is just the way it's supposed to be. And that was definitely not the case with Jaylen at all.
Biggest issue with him last year, well, there's two things. One of the issues I had with him was at the beginning of the season, Brad Stevens, when Jaylen Brown was actually in the starting lineup, he didn't put him in a position to succeed. He was basically just camping out, watching Kyrie, Jason Tatum, etc. Like, there was no movement for Jaylen Brown off the ball. They weren't running anything to kind of highlight his skill set, so to speak. And then the other thing that really aggravated me about last year, Mike, was, as you pointed out, how he was great the second half of the season. For whatever reason, Brad Stevens...
That's not the second half. That's the last two-thirds of the season.
Oh, fair enough. But anyway, my point being, Mike, is that Brad Stevens never gave him the opportunity to win his starting role back, and this is when Marcus Morris has just taken shot after shot after shot, and he was bad for 3 months. The only reason Jaylen Brown got back into the starting lineup is because Smart was injured for the postseason. So, okay, if you want to keep Smart, I would have been fine with them keeping Smart in there last year, but Marcus Morris is the guy that deserved to lose his job, but Brad Stevens never gave Jaylen Brown the ability to win his job back.
Honestly, Jaylen outplayed Jason on top of that. I mean, this is the thing. Who was one of the best players on the team in the postseason? It was Brown.
Oh, yeah, Tatum was awful,
Mike. Out big time. He stepped up.
Yeah.
I mean, I love Jason Tatum. I know the point here is things need to go back to the way they were before. Marcus needs to go back to the bench. He has more value to us off of the bench. Brown needs to be put back on you know, the full-time guy ticket here, and he needs access to the ball. And one of the things that's great about this whole experience is I was just reading an article on CBS Sports where, you know, the writer said, you know, the best forward has been Jaylen Brown. And this is the thing, you know, he's on Team USA and he's the best forward on the team.
Yeah, he had 19 this morning, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, they got Chris Middleton on that team. They got Tatum on that team. They have Barnes on that team. But who's the best of them all? It's Brown. So coming back into the season, you know, Brad needs to kind of get his mind straight here and give this kid a real chance to do what he can do. Because honestly, I think the only thing that's preventing him from really making an all-star team this season, or would prevent him, is just access to the ball. If you keep the ball away from him and say, "Oh, let's see, you know, we're going to try to turn you into a role player," it's not going to do him any good, and it's not going to do the team any good. You have to establish your stars, and I think the league would happily make kind of put him to the forefront along with Kemba and Tatum. If Brad just kind of made that an emphasis.
Yeah, it's a fair point, Mike, and I appreciate the phone call. His line's open if you want to grab it at 617-779-7937. And to Mike's point, you can't just make Jaylen Brown a role player, because what would the point be of taking him third overall? That's the issue that I've always had, not to mention the fact that when you look at Jaylen Brown and you compare him with Jason Tatum, I'm not going to dispute the fact that Jason Tatum, in my mind, has the higher ceiling because I think he has more skills from an offensive standpoint, right? But in terms of the floor, Jaylen Brown's floor is higher than Jason Tatum's. Like, there is a possibility that Jason Tatum is just a one-dimensional scorer that never develops, right? And he could still be a decent player, but, you know, he's an inefficient scorer. There is that possibility with Jason Tatum. With Jaylen Brown, this guy is a legitimate two-way player. He's very good from a defensive perspective already, so that floor is already high. I just don't know what it is that Brad Stevens and the coaching staff, like, held against Jaylen Brown last year. Is it because he was so outspoken about Kyrie Irving? I never understood that. Like, Jaylen, to me, in terms of pure talent, is right up there, top 2 to 3 on this roster, and they just did not showcase him enough. And remember, he was the same pick in the draft as Tatum, third overall. Let's get to Paul. He's in Westfield. What's up, Paul?
Well, Bri, I have two questions on the Celts, but can I say Jackie Bradley Jr. should say, just bring jail bail. Because the other night, again, I hear the smack of the bat, Barnes drops his head, and boop, there he is, climbing the wall. He pre-studies the walls, apparently, and does things no one else does. Can you get a better wall climber in the major leagues than him?
He is pretty good at climbing those walls, isn't he, Paul?
Yes, sir. I have two serious questions on the Celts, because you bring
sure.
up a good
point. Where everybody's getting more involved, and he's got to figure out a way to feature his stars. Like, Kemba Walker, Jaylen Brown, and Jason Tatum, and you throw Gordon Hayward on that list too if he looks like he's healthy coming back, but he's going to make sure he puts all those guys in positions where they have opportunities to get to the basket and score, opportunities to take jump shots, opportunities to go to work, instead of last year where it just felt like it was Kyrie Irving getting the ball, and then when Kyrie didn't have the ball, everybody was trying to prove themselves as the second best player on the team, so that's why when Marcus Morris gets the ball, he just chucks it up. He's trying to prove himself. Same thing with Jason Tatum. So that's the concern I have. Can the coach actually figure it out this year where they run an offensive system that actually has some meaning behind what the guys are doing? Last year, I felt like they were just in a pickup game.
Yeah, that's an accurate and interesting observation, the part about Kyrie being the leader and them trying to catch up. You're exactly right. In hero ball, no second and third pass. So my biggest question is this. I remember last year you brought up the point that Gordon Hayward had played very little before the season began. Mm-hmm. And then he was good, and then bad, and then great, and then terrible. Is there any indicators? He's only 29. Is he back to his real self so we can have him dropping the threes like we thought we were going to get when we got him?
Yeah, Paul, I appreciate the phone call, and it's a valid question. You can grab his line if you'd like. It's 617-779-7937. Here's the thing, and they've alluded to this, the Celtics have, and Paul George has alluded to it. It took Paul George about 2 years to get back. So if Gordon Hayward isn't the player or close to the player that he was in Utah's final season there this year, if he's not close to that guy, then it's not going to happen. It has to happen this year with Gordon Hayward. And the Celtics have gone out of their way to basically point out how healthy Gordon Hayward looks, how much he's working out. So this would be the year for Gordon Hayward to turn things around, if he's going to turn things around. All right, a lot more to get into. The number is 617-779-7937. Another interesting thing on the Celtics, there are some people out there that think a certain member of this team should be the captain. I don't know if I quite frankly agree with that. We'll get into that. You're listening to Brian Barrett right here on WEI.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.